Hey, do you remember Short Circuit 2? Hello, and welcome to Hey, Do You Remember?, a show where we reminisce about a movie or TV series we grew up with, then take off the rose-tinted glasses to see how it holds up today. I'm Chris.
I'm Donna.
I'm Carlos.
And today we're revisiting Short Circuit 2.
Some say he's nuts.
To the moon, Alice!
Some say he's bolts.
Muchas gracias.
But everyone agrees he's America's most electric leading man.
Short Circuit 2 is a 1988 comedy directed by Kenneth Johnson, written by Brent Maddock and S.S. Wilson, and starring Fisher Stevens and Michael McKean. Steve Guttenberg and Ali Sheedy are a no-show in the sequel, so Stevens' Ben Javari character has been upgraded from zany sidekick to leading man. He's a recent New York City transplant who in a single day goes from being a sidewalk huckster to co-owner of a company that's manufacturing toy versions of the robots from the first film. There's a ham-fisted reunion with Johnny Five, some nonsense about diamonds being stored in a bank vault, and a lot more existential exploration than you'd ever expect to find in a kids' movie. Donna, what do you remember about Short Circuit Dose?
Well, I remember not very much, actually. I know that I saw this movie. I think that my dad brought it home for family movie night. And I'm fairly certain, now I'm not sure, but I feel like I still have never seen Short Circuit 1.
Okay.
Maybe? Mm-hmm. I'm not sure. I certainly don't remember it if I did see it. But there are a few scenes from this movie that I remember. I specifically remember when Johnny Five is fending off the bad guys, and he spins them around with their crowbars.
At about 2 miles an hour?
Yeah.
They're just completely vertical.
Yeah.
Or horizontal.
That really stuck in my head, and I wondered why... more robbers didn't wear colorful ski masks after that, because I thought you usually see them in just black ski masks. And I thought, well, this is really nice.
Short Circuit 2, asking the tough questions.
Fashion Corner.
I know.
It's all you this week, Donna.
You can get stocking caps in so many colors. I was a kid who really, really gave feelings and emotions to everything. I didn't want to leave a certain pair of socks in the drawer too long, because what if I hurt their feelings? Like, this is where my mind was at. I was always, everything had feelings to me. So Johnny Five, immediately I was on board. Of course, he has so many feelings, and I totally understand when he's sad, and... So I loved that. I remember loving him, and I remember at the end when he was golden, and I felt really good about that. And that's basically my memories of it.
Carlos, what about you?
I definitely remember the segment where he builds himself back in the Radio Shack. Mm-hmm. Because I remember the mohawk, really. Mm. I remember him being gold-plated at the end. And doing the jump, the 80s jump.
The freeze frame, yeah.
Yeah, fantastic. And I remember, I definitely remember the main character, Ben Javari.
Whatever.
I remember him being great. And then I remembered like 10 years later finding out it was Fisher Stevens and going, pretty sure that's racist.
Yeah.
Seriously.
I remember my mind being blown when I found out that this guy was also in Mario Brothers.
Mm-hmm.
What else? Do I remember anything else really from it? This was a movie that was on all the time when I was a kid. And much like Donna, I didn't see Short Circuit 1 until I was at least like 25.
Mm.
Like this movie was always on. This movie, much like Breakin' 2, Electric Boogaloo. And I've never seen Breakin' 1 all the way through, but I've seen Breakin' 2 100 times. This movie I've seen 100 times, and I've never seen, and I hadn't seen Short Circuit 1 really until I was much, much older.
Mm. Yeah, I definitely saw this one numerous times before I ever watched the original. I was never really into the first one. The pace was too slow. It wasn't as funny. It felt a little clumsy. In my mind, part two is a much better and a much more entertaining movie. And I think it's maybe because it's not as... This is going to sound strange, but I remember the first one being almost too earnest. Like they were trying to make the next E.T., but with a robot.
Yeah.
And listen, this movie actually has some pretty heavy shit in it, which was a really pleasant surprise. And it's funny, like, that all the stuff with the humans is pretty two-dimensional and sitcom-y, but most of the stuff with Johnny Five is, like, shockingly thoughtful. And, you know, regardless, I like the tone of this one better, even with all of the philosophical and spiritual issues it raises. And I can't believe I'm saying that, but it really was my favorite part of the movie. Even with that stuff, it still feels breezier and more fun than its predecessor. Except for one particular moment. And here's the thing. If we're talking about our memories of the movie, the day I saw Short Circuit 2 in the theater was one of the worst days of my life. And I was going to say at that point, but maybe overall. And I'll obviously explain why in a second here, but I also want to save most of it for when we get to this particular scene in the film. I was 6 years old when I saw this, and watching Johnny Five get beaten to death by two thugs with crowbars was pretty much the most traumatic thing I'd seen up till then. I mean, my dad would show me RoboCop a few years later, and that blew this right the fuck out of the water. But yeah, this was bad, and it's the only time I had a full-on meltdown in the theater, like a real conniption. I was crying and wailing, and my dad was trying to calm me down. And the movie really fucks with you, too, because it's not just that he's beaten, like, because he outsmarts the guys and they run away, and my dad was like, see, he's okay. But no, Dad, he's not. Like, the getting beaten part is really just the beginning of this avalanche of sorrow that's about to overtake you. And this movie messed me up. Like, and it got to the point where finally my dad was so exasperated that he goes, Chris, it's a movie. None of this is real. There is no Johnny Five. Wow. It's all pretend.
Yes.
Now listen, we are so far removed from this mindset now that it seems inconceivable that there was like ever a time where we took stuff like this at face value, but we did. And so I used to watch this TV show called Captain Power and the Soldiers of the Future. And one weekend, like, my mom surprised me and took me to the mall to meet Captain Power in person. And I wasn't shaking hands with some asshole in a costume making minimum wage. I was meeting the real Captain Power. My delusion was impenetrable at this age. So to hear someone tell you that it's all fake, because it's not just Johnny Five, it's everything you're into. This is what Al Gore would call an inconvenient truth.
And so you know that Johnny Five's not real.
And I'm just like, I'm staring at my dad. And you could tell he instantly regretted this. And my expression changed from complete agony to just total anger. And I didn't say anything back to him. But in my mind, it's like, what's the fucking point of anything? It's all bullshit. Who cares? Why feel? Why is feelings? And that's how I became a serial killer. But like, I mean, there had never been anything like this before. I mean, I have vague memories of being pulled out of Transformers the movie when Optimus Prime dies. And holy shit, there's a pattern here. I care more for machines than man. Can I interest you guys in this new startup I'm putting together? It's called Skynet.
This brave little toaster, like the most like just depressing movie you've ever seen.
Oh my god! No, Short Circuit 2 numbed me to everything. So, I mean, the point is, this wasn't just a traumatic afternoon. And you guys are going to think this is so stupid, but this kind of screwed me up for an entire year. Like, just in terms of movies and TV shows and how I reacted to things, it really did a number on me. And that's the part I'll talk more about later because it got pretty crazy. But for now, I'll just leave it as despite the fact that this movie melted my six-year-old brain and forced me to have my own year-long existential crisis, I ultimately learned to love it quite a bit. And like I said, I did rewatch it a lot after tons of therapy. And so with that said, we just looked at it with fresh eyes. So let's see how Short Circuit 2 holds up. Okay, so first things first, Fisher Stevens, it's the whitewashed elephant in the room. Let's just get it out of the way.
My God.
Fisher Stevens.
I mean, I think he's good. I do. I think he's funny and charismatic. And as a kid, you definitely just go with it. It doesn't even occur to you. But as an adult, the accent and the broken English is a bit much. He's doing the Apu voice from Quickie Mart.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really bad. I didn't remember this character from the movie, you know, from a kid. And turning it on, and I was like, oh, okay, yeah, I've looked at this. Fisher Stevens, sure, Johnny Five, I know what I'm getting into. And then it took me about halfway through the first scene, and I was like, wait, that is Fisher Stevens! What? Like, oh, my God, how is that? Is that what? And when did we switch that? When? Because I feel like I thought that Mickey Rooney playing Mr. Yunioshi in Breakfast at Tiffany's was about the end when we were like, okay, we should stop doing that.
I mean, well, that is definitely a lot worse than what's happening here. But
you're not supposed to do that. You really aren't. That's not your nationality. You're not supposed to play that part in the movie.
Here's where I'm torn is that on the... Okay, so I'm thinking about the first Short Circuit and when they're casting this role. And, okay, now is it a situation where, like, look, yes, this is an Indian character, but we're also going after the best actor for the role. And Fisher Stevens, he's got the right comedic timing, and so that just means, is it the same thing as making Javier Bardem into an Aryan-looking guy for Skyfall? But it's not really the same, and here's why. It's that, number one, I'm not sure that in 1986, when they did the first Short Circuit, that, like, Fisher Stevens, you couldn't even excuse it as, like, but we need a name. We need a name for the poster. Right. I'm pretty sure that movie was one of the first things he did, so that couldn't have been a factor.
He's 25 when this movie came out. He was 25, so he'd have been, like, 22.
Oh, my gosh, he was a kid. Yeah, so here's...
So young.
So here's the other thing, then. So then if you go... All right, look, we've looked at a lot of actors, and Fisher Stevens is clearly the best person for this part. Well, then why do you not go back and go, does the character have to be Indian then?
Right. But he's not playing a character that we're laughing at because he's Indian, if that makes any sense.
Well, except when, yes, 90% of the time I think that's totally accurate. But there is the stuff about, oh, this crazy foreigner mixes up his metaphors and his, you know, the all these, you know, how he's always getting sayings wrong? Like, you hit the nail right between the eyes.
I thought that was horribly offensive. Like, every time it's like, because they speak English in India. It's not like something he would have really messed up that badly.
Yeah.
There's a early moment in the movie where, somebody says to him, like, what about your capital? And he says, Washington, D.C. It's like, that's silly. He would know what capital is. But in terms of this movie, playing the dual storyline of both of these characters don't fit in, and both of them want to become American citizens or just to be recognized as part of this country. That works, but then don't use Fisher Stevens.
Right,
or make Fisher Stevens from another country where there are white people.
It's so funny that I don't remember a whole lot about the first movie, but I don't remember his heritage playing a large role. He's barely in the first movie. He doesn't have that much screen time. So,
right.
And so why did he have to be Indian there? I'm not so sure. But then it's like you said, it is such a vital part of, like, this parallel storyline of what he's going through and what Johnny Five is going through. And I really would have missed that in this film.
Absolutely.
But I think it's so easy, and I think so many other movies do it, to be like, oh, well, he just spends his time with computers and robots, and he doesn't know how to talk to girls, and he's all alone. You could easily be an American and have those same problems. You could still feel isolated. You could still be alone. You could still not know how to talk to a girl without all of these kind of odd, insensitive moments.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point. No, yes, that's absolutely true. You know, the other funny thing is that I'm pretty sure he had a different last name in the first movie. Like in this one, he's Ben Javari. In the other one, it was something like Jabatuya. It was ridiculous. But like, for what reason would you? It seems like such an arbitrary change. Like, remember in Karate Kid 2 when Daniel goes to Japan with Mr. Tamagotchi? Like, what the fuck? Why would you? It doesn't.
So I don't know if you guys, I don't know. So I rented this movie on Netflix, and there is a small bonus reel that is an interview with Fisher Stevens and Michael McKean when they were promoting the movie. And he talks about how fun it is to play Ben Javari and to be able to change himself, step into somebody else's shoes and be like totally goofy and out of, did you see that? No, nobody saw that.
I watched it online.
Did you find that?
I didn't see that.
I just felt like, man, I wish I could go back in time and talk to young Fisher Stevens, who I really like, who I think is a good actor, who's a Chicago guy, and who I feel like you just want to be like, oh, I want you to succeed so badly, and you're a good actor, but this is just not going to play well in the future.
This certainly doesn't excuse it, but there seems to be just a total cluelessness across the board from everybody in terms of, like, this was harmless, you know? Like, again, it doesn't excuse it, but it was harmless.
Sure. I think that was an overwhelming perception.
Agreed.
So Ben is selling toy versions of the military robots from part one. He's a street vendor right next to the guys hawking knockoff watches and purses. And one of those guys is Fred, played by Michael McKean. And let's pause for a second here and talk about the cast and the lack of cast, because Steve Guttenberg and Ally Sheedy were the main characters in the first one. Like I said, Fisher Stevens, he isn't actually in a whole lot of it. I gotta say, I know you guys don't really remember the first movie that much, but I don't miss them at all.
Oh, good.
I mean,
I've seen the first one, and it amazed me how little Ben had to do with the first one.
Yeah.
When I saw, because to me, it was like, oh, this is like, you know, a classic buddy, you know, buddy film. And he's an afterthought in the first film.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I don't miss Steve Guttenberg, because any movie made in, you know, 1980s period was going to have Steve Guttenberg in it. So to get one without him is nice.
I mean, I don't mind.
I'm sorry, Steve Guttenberg. Steve Guttenberg, if you're listening to this and you would like to be a guest on our show. You know what? I heard Ted Danson talking about how Steve Guttenberg was telling him that they should all get together and do a Three Men and a Baby, I guess it would be the third one now. Like three men and a
grown woman. I mean, yeah, like,
but Ted Dan, I believe it was Ted Danson, was like, it's always the out of work ones who want to get and I was like, well, Steve Guttenberg must not be that nice a guy if, you know, nice old Ted Danson's not.
I don't know. I have nothing against Steve Guttenberg, and that's, I mean, even though it's not that I don't like him or that I didn't like him in the first movie, it's just that I like the dynamic between Ben and Fred so much better than what was going on in that first film. And as a kid, I remember being put off by the Fred character, because, you know, you're supposed to be. Mm. But he's great. And this is probably the first time I watched this that I realized just how much Michael McKean brings to the role.
He is fantastic.
I agree, absolutely.
I like his relationship with Ben. I like his relationship with Johnny Five. I like all the different dynamics going on in the movie. Even, you know, even the love interest is good. You know, Sandy, played by Cynthia Gibb, she's plucky, she's fun.
I would say if we don't want to F her, I don't know who we want to F.
We're shit out of luck. I know. It's going to be the shortest version of that game we've ever played.
She's the only woman in the film.
She is.
Other than the female cop, she's the only woman.
So, like I mentioned earlier, all the stuff with the humans is pretty broad. And I know we made similar comments about Dick Tracy, and I was a little critical of how the females were written in that film. And I guess the reason it doesn't bother me as much here is that Sandy might be broad, but she's not really a cliche. You know, she's a woman trying to succeed in a man's world, and as played out as that idea might be now, this is 1988. It was very relevant territory. And I like that she doesn't fall for Ben's goofy advances, and she sees through or, like, calls him out on the stuff that isn't genuine. And I also really like the quick scene we get of her playing guitar and rocking out, like, because they don't make a big deal of it. They don't call a lot of attention to it. It's just in there, like, and she plays guitar. So what? She's got a life outside of this weird foreign guy hitting on her.
I like that, too. Mm-hmm.
So Sandy is a buyer for a toy dealer, and she's in hot water with her boss because she hasn't been able to bring him anything he can sell. And one of Ben's toys escapes. Sandy finds it, realizes this is exactly the kind of thing her boss is looking for. And then Fred sees an opportunity to weasel his way into this situation, promises Sandy that he and Ben will be able to manufacture as many of these little robots as she needs. And what's going on with Ben's calculator, by the way? Because the sounds this thing makes are absurd. He's just adding stuff up. He's doing simple calculations, and it's making Star Trek noises.
I noticed that, too.
It's like, is it a calculator or a touch-tone phone? What the fuck is happening?
Oh, it was made from the Deus Ex Machina Corporation.
Yeah, it really was.
In case you just needed a plot driver.
Oh, my God. Well, one thing I really like about these opening moments is how efficiently the backstory is slipped in there. Like, not only do you really not need to have seen the first one, but even if you have and you're wondering why the main characters are missing and why the location has changed, it's all covered. And they do it in a pretty clean and seamless way. And in fact, what surprised me was it's the way he keeps mentioning his friends in Montana after this first scene that starts to feel clunky and unnecessary. Like, yes, we heard you. We get it. They're in Montana. I don't give a fuck. I don't really like them very much. Let's move on.
Stop talking to those people. They're no good for you.
They had their chance. This is Short Circuit 2.
This ain't Police Academy 9. This is Short Circuit 2.
We should also mention these stupid diamonds. We see all the fanfare when the plane carrying them lands in New York.
Totally just nonsense part of this movie.
The police escort the diamonds to this bank, and it's the bank where Oscar works. And every time this fucker pops up, I wrote in my notes in all caps, "Fuck you, Oscar. I remember what you did to me as a child, you backstabbing shit show."
And see, I totally forgot that Oscar was in on it.
So it's it was a pretty good reveal, right?
A big reveal to me. I was like, oh my God.
The way they do it is surprisingly effective.
This movie's surprisingly efficient on all levels, I would have to say.
Yes, it is. It really is. Here's something else I liked. The first time we see Oscar and he's just watching the diamonds, fucking diamonds because 80s, he's watching them being moved into this vault, and he's just another faceless employee of this huge bank. And all you see is people pushing past him, and he's trying to sneak a peek, and they're just like, "Get out of the way, Oscar." And it's just a few seconds of screen time that really helps justify what we come to find out about him later. Like, you get who this guy is at this workplace.
Agreed.
And then, oh boy, then we see Fred trying to acquire the capital to start this business with Ben. And what the actual fuck is happening here? This is a kid's movie. They're in a strip club. Like, fine. These are seedy people he's dealing with. Fred's a little unsavory himself. And I didn't watch this in the highest resolution, but is that a fucking topless woman dancing behind him in this scene?
I did not notice that.
I think it is. I think she has like a bikini top on, actually, but it's definitely strip club implied. And I watched the movie twice, and the first time I didn't really notice because I was just focused on like, oh wow, he's going to a loan shark, you know? And the second time I really was when I noticed. So it's like, nope, that is a pole and a lady They're definitely in a strip club.
She should have been topless is what I'm saying.
What are you going to do? Yeah, I mean, maybe
I find your lack of tassels disturbing. the first thing I noticed in the scene, I was like, you can make it as small in the background as you want. I mean, can you imagine, like, on a theater screen? Like, my dad must have been like, ooh, that's going to be an interesting conversation later. It's a good thing they fucked up Johnny Five and we wound up talking about what death is and just had to completely bypass what the jibbly jubblies in the background were doing.
You got that talk instead.
Yeah. So Fred gets the money they need. He shows Ben the new factory, which is a real shithole. It's across from the bank with the diamonds, so you start to see where this is all going. But how awesome would it have been if these stories never connected? Like, the diamond business is just on the other side of town, and it's a separate story with no payoff. And at the end, you're like, what the hell was that all about?
Yeah, because the guys come out of the van, too, and they're holding shotguns, and no one cares.
Oh,
and they,
God.
they pump the shotguns when they walk out. It kind of looks like the first scene from The Dark Knight. Like,
yeah.
Like, they're going to rob this bank.
But,
but they're just security that holds shotguns.
To me, it looked like they were about to apprehend a very dangerous criminal.
Yeah.
I was like, why are they surrounding this airplane? And they do, and you have no fucking clue what any of it is. They just cut to Ben. And I'm like, well, was that important? I don't know.
It was clearly, you know what? That part looks like the first scene in The Dark Knight Rises. Maybe Chris Nolan is just a fan of Short Circuit 2.
I think
too.
We're onto something here. It's true. No, it can't be because the female character in this is written too well.
Oh, shots fired. Shots fired, Chris Nolan. We're coming for you, Chris Nolan.
So anyway, we see that there are, you know, two thugs underneath the factory who are now panicking because this warehouse was supposed to be vacant. And these schlubs are tunneling their way towards the bank vault, but they can't finish the job with Ben and Fred working above them. And this sets the stage for the second act, which revolves around their increasingly ambitious attempts to get these guys to vacate. But first, oh my God, Ben gets a delivery. What in the world could be in this giant crate?
What's in the box?
It's Gwyneth Paltrow's head. This movie takes a dark turn.
This movie takes a dark turn in time. That movie wouldn't be released for another 6 years. That would be awesome if at the end of 7, it's just like, if
Johnny
you want to know, watch Short Circuit 2.
Oh, I thought at the end of 7, it's Johnny 5 in the box.
Johnny 5 in the box.
I like
that would be good.
Johnny
yeah.
5 in the box would be a great name for a hamburger chain.
And then at the end, sorry guys, I was going through some shit. David Fincher. It's the director's going through some shit series.
I like that. It's by Criterion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's Johnny 5, and I have to say, there is a simplicity to this design that makes it still hold up today. In fact, I think of all the special effects movies that we've watched so far, I was a little surprised that this was the one that seemed the least dated to me.
Yeah.
I'm amazed by Johnny Five.
He's still so cool. He could roll in right now and I would be amazed and thrilled. There's nothing about him that looks dated to me, I don't think.
Well, what isn't as impressive is the reason Johnny Five is there. We're told that Ali Sheedy and the Goot have sent him all the way from Montana to help. to help Ben build his toy robots. I thought the whole point of having him in Montana was to hide out and stay under the radar, like the military is presumably still searching for this thing. And you just throw him in a crate and send him to one of the most densely populated cities in America. In a crate! It's like if Gandalf just FedExed the One Ring to Frodo. You know what? But
would he need to sign for that ring, or would they just leave it?
It depends on what options Gandalf, you know, sprung for. You would hope there was some insurance on there, you know, signature, delivery confirmation. Sorry, guys, I was going through some shit. Peter Jackson. you know what? But fine. This movie is doing a lot of other things right, so I'm going to give it a pass on this. Because, you know what? They're in a tricky spot. They don't have the two leads from the last film. We left this character in bumfuck Montana. So no matter what they did to get him in New York City with Ben, it was probably always going to feel like a little bit of a stretch. But yeah, let's talk about Johnny Five, because when he first rolls out of the box, I was worried this might be a situation where a character that I loved as a kid would be super annoying now. But that didn't happen here. Like, from the moment Johnny Five appears, he's the main character and the film really picks up. Ben just turns into the sidekick again. And I think that's fine, because Ben's storyline with Sandy is so generic and predictable, whereas everything they do with Johnny Five is really interesting. I mean, the majority of the movie is, you know, Johnny Five insisting that he's not just a machine, he's not someone's property, he has a soul, and he doesn't understand why he's not being treated like a human being. And people are shitty to him. Some laugh at him, some are scared of him. I didn't remember any of this, and I was really, really impressed that the bulk of his screen time is all about this inner conflict.
If you would have told me before this movie came out, like, let's say I'm a grown-up back then, oh, what we're really trying to do with Short Circuit 2 is, like, we really want Johnny Five to, like, explore his self and his soul and just, you know, look into what does it mean to be a life form. And I would have said, that's not what this movie is. Like, you know, like, that's, this movie is supposed to be fun, and it's about a talking robot who talks jive while, you know, being Johnny Five. And that's your tagline, actually, for the movie. He talks jive, he's Johnny Five. But somehow this movie pulls off all the existential stuff in a still very light way, so that you're, you know, when he's, like, you know, looking at his reflection in the mirror after, like, the, we're skipping a little bit, but this woman thinks he's a sculpture and says that his lines are, was it his lines are, like, jagged? I forgot what it was.
Yeah,
but, like,
yeah.
He was, like, grotesque or something like that. And he looks at himself in this, like, kind of jacked up reflection, and he's like, am I not, you know, what am I? Am I grotesque? Am I not, you know, natural or whatever? I think that this movie pulls off those moments just as well as it pulls off all the kind of shticky, you know, I'm picking up on pop culture stuff.
Yes, absolutely. And I think if you look at, because it does seem like some pretty weighty subject matter for a kids movie, but it's handled in a fashion that is still appropriate for kids, because it's not Blade Runner. It's not, it doesn't, which is, which is sort of some very similar ideas, but obviously it's a more complex, more nuanced story. This isn't, and it shouldn't be, because it, again, yeah, it is for kids, but, you know, we can talk more about some of these scenes as we go along, but this was hands down the best stuff in the movie for me. And maybe the way, you know, the way all this stuff wraps up feels a little quick or tacked on, but in general, I think there is a nice progression to all of it. And I guess that I'm so won over by the fact that it was included at all that I'm not really bothered by the fact that the answers to these existential questions aren't as interesting or as satisfying as the questions themselves. But I think that's probably inevitable, too. You know, given the issues they're tackling here, there are no good answers, which that's sort of what makes this all so fascinating and relatable in the first place. And I can't fucking believe we're talking about Short Circuit 2. And if you haven't seen the movie, you may think we're reading too much into it or that I'm making a mountain out of a molehill. But no, I'm telling you, this stuff is a huge part of the film, and it is treated with the same significance that we're giving to it right now.
I thought it was incredible. And I was so with him every moment. I was so with Johnny Five. And yeah, the woman calling him ugly when you realize he's trying, Michael McKean is trying to sell him. It's like, I'm not property, I'm alive, I'm a soul. And then he goes, he picks up Frankenstein and Pinocchio. It's like, what am I? Who am I? And so he goes to the church to try to find answers.
Oh, I want to, can we save the church thing? Because I want to,
sure.
Yeah, that deserves its own, like, yeah, we need to get into it with all of that, with all these Johnny Five scenes in particular. But before we get, like, too far into all the heavy stuff, I want to say really quick, he boasts about having 500 megabytes of memory. My PlayStation is more powerful than Johnny Five.
Anytime he says the word megabytes, I laughed out loud. Megabytes of data.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, entire megabytes, Johnny? That's great.
The Mr. Rogers clip, I think, is the first time they really acknowledge. That's the first hint that you get.
Oh my God.
Of what the Johnny Five thing's going to be about, because the Mr. Rogers clip is all about I'm human, I have feelings. That's the moment I knew the movie was going to do something meaningful with this character. And the sequel may have been a cash grab, but they could have done something a lot more cynical or arbitrary. But this movie is about something. And it's strange because I think when you consider the demographic for this, it probably skews a little younger than most of what we've watched so far. And yet, in my opinion, this is the one that surprised me the most. I'm not saying it's the best, but I think it might be the most focused screenplay up to this point.
I think it's super tight. Mm-hmm. I think you know what? I wouldn't say this is a cash grab.
Well,
this movie
I meant more
is
from
110
like
minutes long.
From the studio's point of view about like, oh, that Short Circuit movie made some money. Let's get a sequel together.
I think in terms of like some executive probably thought of it as in only financial terms, but the creative people involved here, I mean, this screenplay is really well thought out. It's, I think, really tight. When they reveal that Oscar is the main villain of the movie, mm-hmm. I was shocked. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh my God. I thought he was a nice old man who, mm-hmm. I thought he was eventually, you know, I thought he was just going to be like a running joke throughout the movie. He ends up being the villain.
Yeah.
And then all of the stuff with the, you know, the existential, you know, crisis that Johnny Five's going through. And even the sweet scene, eventually that you get, that's really the only scene, or at least the first scene between Ben and Johnny, where they're both talking about what it's like to be lonely. I mean, this was like really well written stuff for an 80s movie about a talking
robot. It totally was. And it's the same guys that wrote the first one. And to me, this is just a huge step up in quality. And I just, in my mind, a sequel to Short Circuit so easily could have been a real disaster.
If you would have told me the sequel to Short Circuit was Short Circuit in the City, I would have said that's like every horrible sequel.
Yeah.
Like there's a leprechaun in the hood. You know what I mean? Like this very easily could have been that.
Oh,
and
no, go ahead. Sorry.
And I'm just so glad that it wasn't like Johnny Five saves the orphanage for, you know, the state saves the youth center from the gangbanging drug dealers, you know, like, because that's so easily what this could have been.
Yeah.
Because so many movies were
that. Speaking of the city setting, let's talk about the city, because this movie is filmed in Canada. They call it New York, but when Oscar gives him the sightseeing guide,
yes!
It's for St. Louis.
Thank you.
This is happening everywhere and nowhere.
It's the giant city from The Matrix. It's the city of cities. I was so confused. I was like, did he just give him a random travel guide?
Yeah.
Because it's a travel guide for, it's definitely for St. Louis.
Yeah.
But at the same
That's
time.
That's the first hint that Oscar's the bad guy. You're going to get lost.
I honestly thought that was going to come back. I was like, oh, he gave him the wrong travel guide. Way to go, Oscar. You sly devil. But no, it was just random Canadians don't know what cities look like in America.
And I thought maybe they didn't say definitively this is New York. But then when you get to the climax and it's all like on Broadway and no, this
right.
is definitely New York.
And the whole time I was just like, oh, maybe there's a Broadway in St. Louis. Maybe there are docks in St. Louis. Like, I was just like, because I've never been to St.
Sure,
Louis.
Who knows?
It's like, maybe there's an oceanfront. I don't know.
Well,
I've never
right
been.
Right on the Mississippi. It's the gateway to the West. So there would be docks where you would.
Okay.
It's like a shipping port.
However you want to take it, it works. I think is.
Let me just stand up for St. Louis real quick.
I'm not bashing St. Louis. What I'm saying was the rest of the movie, I was like, I guess this could be St. Louis. I don't know.
Yeah.
I've never been. Maybe that's what their downtown looks like. I had no idea. I was so confused by that moment. It threw me out. Out of the whole movie.
The next major thing I want to talk about is Los Locos.
Oh my God, I'm so glad you brought that up.
Oh my God.
I like the idea behind this scene, like people taking advantage of Johnny Five's good nature and him being too naive to understand that he's being used. But what the fuck is it with Hollywood and street gangs in the 80s?
They didn't understand them. They just didn't know.
As flamboyant as WWF wrestlers. It's like Adventures in Babysitting. It's like everyone saw the Warriors and went, well, obviously this is a documentary and this is what's happening out there.
I've never heard of people using a battle cry before breaking into someone's car, but maybe that happens.
Like somebody had to write the lyrics to that. Like a gang member. No. What rhymes with balls?
So many things.
But so
no sense.
So
nose.
Yeah, he steals a bunch of car stereos for a street gang. Then he meets Oscar. Fuck you, Oscar. Fred learns that Johnny Five is worth $11 million. Wants to sell him rather than make just a measly $50,000 for the toys. I think that's what it was. Fred tries to sell Johnny Five. Johnny Five crashes through the window, skydives away. This little case on his back is like Batman's utility belt. It just holds whatever he needs to get out of any situation.
It's so cool.
He called it a utility case.
Oh, does he? Sorry. Okay, well, then I guess it all makes sense. The fact that none of this could fit in there.
He does not skydive. He hang glides.
Oh, right.
Absolutely
and I was like,
true.
That's an important distinction.
Is that still, can you still do that? Because I always kind of want to do that. And I feel like people aren't
doing
hang gliding anymore.
Certainly not in big cities, but maybe
no.
Maybe elsewhere.
I'm only doing it if I can do it off the Trump.
Mm-hmm. All I could think about in that scene was what would happen in New York now if you saw a giant, not even robotic, mechanical thing flying through the sky toward skyscrapers on a hang glider? Wouldn't you think people would just be like, because everyone's like, what is that? That thing looks so cool. And now it would be like, oh my God, call 911. We're under attack.
Yes, there is that aspect, but I think a part of me would also be like, I mean, props for creativity. Who, you know, you don't see hang gliders anymore. It's just Donna in a robot suit.
At last!
There's a point where there's a really sweet moment in that hang glide scene when Johnny Five's like, I wish I was a bird. Mm. And I was like, oh, that's so, like, you know, it's just so sweet that he wants, like, he loves it up there because...
He says everything like, looks so, what does he say? Like, everything looks so nice
from
up
there? I think he says there's, like, no problems or everything's nice.
Yeah.
Like he's, almost like he's having trouble dealing with, like, human interaction on the ground level, but above it, it just looks so beautiful to him and so problem-free. I was like, that's actually a really sweet moment.
Yeah.
And I really did think, like, he should just build himself some wings. Mm. He can do that.
Well, that's, yeah, I mean, so, but speaking of all of that, and this is what I meant about there being a progression with all of this stuff, because this is where he lands into that art exhibit. The woman goes on and on about how repulsive he is. And then it's at this point he starts wearing a hat and a coat and he's trying to blend in. He's trying to assimilate and people are still shitty to him and he still feels like an outsider and he doesn't understand why. And then this is where we get the most unexpected scene in the film for me. And this is the church scene. And I'm sorry I cut you off before, Donna, but so like whatever your thoughts were on it, like, obviously I would love to hear them.
Well, yeah, I was just very startled, that we were going to go right into the church. I think, those issues had already kind of come up that, oh, well, he's alive, but what does that mean? And he obviously thinks of himself as alive. And then he's in asking the priest and in confession, and the priest is at first really, very exactly what you would expect. And, oh, yes, everyone struggles with these things. Mm-hmm. And
we should say the priest has not looked at him.
Right.
He's in confession.
Yeah.
So he's completely sympathizing with all these things. And then he says, well, I'm not, I have a soul. Johnny Five starts to get, ask more deeper questions. He's like, but I'm not a person. I'm a machine, but I'm alive. Do I have a soul? And the priest just flies off the handle. I can't remember a more horrific throwing out of a church scene, and just really like violently disturbing everyone's prayers and just shouting to get out. And I wondered, because everyone talks about like, well, is this remote control? You can't live your life through remote control. You have to come to confession yourself. I'm like, is this really something that has happened to you? You really, kids, like, come with, like, a little robot car and try to go confession because they can't get out of their house? Like, obviously, I don't know, just look at this thing or talk to it for, you know, a minute, and you can realize that it's more than just, you know, some RV car. But it was very disturbing, I really thought.
I was shocked by the balls of this scene, that there's actually a part in the movie devoted to the purpose of religion, and that rather than have Johnny Five be embraced, he's shunned and, yeah, like you said, chased out of the church. I couldn't believe it.
When he's in confession, when the priest says, "You have a soul," he's like, "A soul." And then he names off all of these different religious texts. Mm. He's like, "I read about this in the Bible, Quran." And then I forget the other ones that he says. But the priest is like, "I tend toward the Bible." Yeah. I just like the idea that these writers are recognizing that every religion, know, is essentially the same. You know, it's in the service of human souls. I just think, yeah, there were so many deep things going on underneath these little moments in the movie.
But yeah, well, I think I forgot to mention the part where Fred takes Johnny Five to the bookstore, and that's why the cops arrest him at this point when he leaves the church.
Yes, because he tears up the bookstore because he reads all the books and he doesn't put them back, which, I mean, if you just asked him to put them back, I bet he would.
Right, yeah. Sure, that's on you, buddy. Come on. Yeah.
I mean, they didn't program manners into him.
Okay, one of my favorite parts is in the bookstore when, Michael McKean has called Johnny Five a crap head and then told him that was a nice thing to call people. So he goes to check out at the bookstore, and this poor little teenage girl, he's like, "I would like to have these books, crap head."
It's funny because it's so, maybe this wasn't the case in 1988, but it's such a misguided attempt at like sound that nobody taught. That was never, no one ever called anyone a crap head. It's such an old, like, we're adults trying to talk like teenagers sort of thing.
You crap head.
And the Johnny Five voice is so sweet and so like, that is a great line.
And that girl just like mugs the perfect. Yeah. It's just like 1 minute in that movie and it's just so funny. I love it. I laughed out loud every time.
Yeah,
the cops catch up.
He gets arrested. They chain him up in the stolen goods room, and he looks so sad, just hanging there, all chained up like Splinter in the first Ninja Turtles. And I like what they were setting up when it comes to the parallels between him and Ben. We talked a little bit about this right at the top, you know, because Ben feels like an outsider too. And the scene where he's telling Johnny Five that, look, this is actually part of being human. This feeling never goes away. The reason people are being so shitty to you has a lot to do with them struggling with the same stuff. And what could have been such a neat and interesting point about humanity is instantly trivialized by the romantic subplot with Sandy. Like, I understand why they did it. And it's sort of cool that Johnny Five wants to blend in and Ben is fighting to stand out and be seen. You know, one wants to be invisible and one is invisible. But to me, Ben's status as an immigrant or being new to this city seems more in line with what Johnny Five's going through rather than his crush on Sandy. It sort of undermines Johnny Five's problem. It's like, oh, you've got cancer? Yeah, I know how you feel. I stubbed my toe. Do either of you have anything that you want to say about their date where Johnny Five is feeding him?
So silly.
I think it's the clumsiest part of the movie for sure.
Yeah.
I didn't even really write anything about it because I was just kind of like, eh, and.
Yeah, it's that same old trope that you keep seeing that somebody's going to feed you lines. It never goes well.
Right.
If you're on a date, just be your own awkward self is going
to
be better.
It's got a couple of funny moments. I hate to, it's like I shit all over the scene and then I'm like, but I did laugh out loud at the part where he starts like reading off the advertisements.
Yeah. Do you ever feel irregular?
Yeah, yeah.
That's the best part.
I like just like, part. Oh, you know Shakespeare. And he's like, do you ever feel?
Listen to me. Oh, no. I like it.
I like when she's like, are you on drugs? Because the last guy I dated started talking like you just before he told me that he was God or something like that. But you're right. This scene sucks.
Just the idea. As a set piece, it's kind of...
Oh, I do love... I think my other favorite part of the movie, besides all the important stuff... and the girl being called a crap head is when the cat comes and messes with Johnny Five's frequency antenna. He goes, I like cats.
Oh, no!
Because I like cats. Chris?
I agree. Yeah. See? That checks out. Yep. There's evidence.
Oh, you know what? I think we should mention that at the beginning of the movie, when Johnny's reading off all of his features, you know, he's got his utility case and everything.
Mm.
Is Chris dying over there?
It gets funnier the more I think about it.
He mentions the stupid "I can control everything" remote control thing.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Which is such, just like, again, this is also made by the Deus Ex Machina Corporation, who, like, it's like, we need something to happen, but it's impossible that this could happen, so Johnny Five can control that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it's, you know, it happens, he uses it for he's like addicted to that little thing. He uses it for everything, but and they even mention, like, how much it would cost to control that advertising board. In that lovely scene that we've just torn apart and laughed at simultaneously.
It's a great scene if you love cats. Which we do, so I don't know, it's not speaking to you, Carlos, you don't know, but as two people who love cats, I can tell you, it works.
It's good, yeah. It's good.
You know, that's just not fair. You know, I'm not a cat person, but I love Hungarian malt shops.
Okay, so it's a whole other level.
It should have worked for me, but it still didn't because of the stupid remote control thing that, you know, the whole movie relies on.
Mm.
Yeah.
One man's... Never mind, I'm done. I'm moving on.
One man's Hungarian malt shop is another woman's cat. So,
oh, gross.
That doesn't make any
sense. You're like the guy in the movie.
Oh,
that old chestnut. I think the next major thing is that it's revealed that Oscar is in cahoots with the two thugs. Mm. Can we bring that word back?
Oh,
cahoots?
Cahoots?
Can we make
thugs?
That happen?
Absolutely.
The tomfoolery these chaps get into when they're in cahoots is a real humdinger.
It's just so great, though, the way that scene is handled. Because you just see these, like, profile shots of the two guys talking to each other at a diner. And then when they, you know, agree on a plan, they cut away to a wide shot. And you see that Oscar's been sitting there the whole time. And he's the one planning it all. And it's so brilliantly done. I was like, oh, my God.
Yeah, I really like that
Oscar.
Reveal. And so... what they're discussing here is that they're out of time when it comes to digging this tunnel, and they realize now that their only option is to trick Johnny Five into finishing it for them. So they kidnap Ben and Fred to get them out of the way. They throw them in the meat locker of a Chinese restaurant. And my favorite part of this moment is when Ben asks if Fred has a phone they can call the cops with, and Fred acts like having your own personal portable phone is the luxury of all luxuries. Like, yeah, hold on, Richie Rich. Let me move some funds around in my Swiss bank account and have my private jet fly it right over.
Do you know how many megabytes a personal phone would use?
I mean,
so many
at
megabytes.
Least 200. And that's almost half the amount it takes to power Johnny Five. So, but you know what's nice? At the very end, did you see what Fred has? His very own luxury of all luxuries.
His Zach Morris brick.
Yeah.
He does. And that was a hot,
The way they get out of this freezer, holy shit. This is so bananas. This is a metric ton of Donkey Kong bananas.
This was one of the things I did remember about this movie.
Really?
Was the... I did remember the
But I mean, but to get to that, Ben takes Doctor Who's sonic screwdriver and attaches it to his beep boop Star Trek calculator. And then through some wonky garbage logic they use, this thing taps into a phone line to call Sandy. But they can't talk to her, so Ben makes music using the calculator. And, yeah, he uses 80s pop songs to tell Sandy where they are. And she doesn't get the message until the next morning. And the first song he plays is Help Me, Rhonda. And instantly she's like, Ben? That's a hell of a leap, Sandy.
I will say that it was nice that they part of their little date was that they both love pop music.
Yeah, there's a lot of – they really do – there is a considerable amount of setup and payoff that works really well in this.
Yeah, and she also had a moment earlier in the movie where she's playing Little Richard and her boss tells her to turn it off because silence somehow would be better than Little Richard.
Yeah, silence is better than Little Richard?
Yeah. So, I mean, they set it up that she's super into music. But again, it would be a huge leap for her to be like, Ben. It must be Ben.
Yeah, because it's like, there's no caller ID yet. And even if there were, what would it have said? Beep boop future calculator calling. But you know what? I loved this part as a kid. Like when she gets in the cab and they're deciphering the meaning of each song, I was like, well, this makes perfect sense. And what an incredibly solid and foolproof plan they've worked out here. But yeah, so Johnny Five digs the tunnel. Oscar gets his diamonds. And then, oh boy. And then Oscar has the two thugs destroy Johnny Five. God damn, is this manipulative and transparent, but holy shit, does it work. This is still hard to watch. I'm 31 years old, and this still made me tear up. I mean, like, the way the fluid sprays out, like blood, they knew what they were doing.
I was a mess watching this. I didn't remember that happened, and I just was beside myself. I had to pull my cat a little bit closer.
Because he's, like, screaming, please, I'm alive.
Oh, God, it's awful.
And it goes on for so long.
It's gruesome
and sad. And I was, like, I was holding it together, but then, like, when, I know this sounds stupid, you guys, but then, like, when Fred finds him and he can't even stand on his own and he can't talk anymore and he starts writing on the wall with chalk. Yeah, I was crying. I'm not ashamed.
Yeah.
I'm a little ashamed. well, but here's why. This is what I was talking about at the beginning of the show. So I mentioned that this really fucked me up for about a year. And the main reason why was that, okay, so even though Johnny Five obviously survives, there is a part where he dies. And, you know, so after the movie, my dad and I have this conversation about death and what it means. And I think it was the first time in my life that I actually understood the concept, or at least the implications of the concept. Like, I remember being aware that my mom and dad were going to die, that everyone around me was going to die, that I was going to die. And again, this is coupled with the newfound realization that movies are a lie. So I feel betrayed by everyone. Like, wait, you knew? You knew this was all bullshit? And so that's why the day I saw this movie was one of the worst days of my life. And I think on some level, I understood that movies and TV shows were entertainment and they were being created by someone somewhere. But there was still a certain magic to it all. Like, you invested in these things in a way that, you know, as an adult, you can't even really recall. It's sort of impossible to remember how it felt. So yeah, this really changed the way I watched things. And I stopped being really invested in movies and stuff. And I stopped caring. I just look at stuff and be like, lies, all lies, you're all liars. And on one level, it's because I was still reconciling that this was all fake. And on another level, it was that if I don't care about this, I can't be hurt by this. And I get it. I know this sounds really, really stupid. And this next part is going to sound even stupider. But I can pinpoint the exact moment that my attitude shifted back. And it was June 23rd, 1989.
Wow.
It was the day my dad took me to see Batman. And it's another reason that movie and that character are so important and mean so much to me. It's the movie that made me fall in love with movies again, and not in spite of the fact that it was a product being created by people behind the scenes. I loved it because of that. It changed the way I watched movies. It's also the movie that made me fall in love with the making of movies, looking at them as art and being in awe of the fact that you could do this. Just totally reframed the way I watched and enjoyed them. You know, they became magical again, but in a whole new way. So as much as Short Circuit 2 fucked up 6-year-old Chris, it also made that next summer so much more special.
That's incredible, dude. Like, I feel like when that conversation happened for me, or when I realized, or when people were like, hey, that's not real, you know, things are pretend like that, I was like, oh, okay, and I finally accepted it, and I was like, but kind of secretly, I was like, maybe they're wrong. I was like, no, of course I know that Santa Claus isn't real, but what if he is?
That's awesome.
We all know Santa Claus isn't real, but what my life pre-assumes is maybe he is?
What's funny is that it was like, you know, when my dad, it was just a year or two later that he did tell me Santa Claus wasn't real, and he was treating it like it was this big thing, and I was kind of looking at him like, are you fucking kidding me? Have we not been through much worse than this?
Yeah.
I would have passed that off to your mother. I would have been like, no, I already told him movies are not real.
You get Santa. That's on you, man.
So, yeah, then we get the Johnny Five Radio Shack patch-up that Carlos remembers. And this is silly, but it's kind of awesome. And this is another scene I was a little surprised by how far they pushed it, or kind of how ballsy it was to, like he is really consumed by revenge, and he looks straight up evil right before he goes to hunt these dudes down. He looks like the Terminator.
His eye is red.
Yeah.
It is.
He's not mad that they beat him. He's mad that they didn't beat Ben and the other guy whose name
Fred,
I can't remember.
Fred.
Thank you, Fred. He's mad that they didn't beat them, which means that they treated him worse than a human.
Yes, exactly.
That's what he's mad about. If they would have beaten them, they'd be like, yeah, sucks, huh? Well, that's a life for us humans.
Well, I think he's also mad because that they used him and they tricked him.
Right.
In a way that they would not have been able to use or trick Ben and Fred.
Sure.
Because Johnny Five has such a positive outlook. He's just looking for input and a human experience. And these bad, angry people took advantage of him yet again. There's more human beings putting him down, treating him as less than. And I think he's finally, this is the point in the movie where he becomes more human like the rest of us, and that he finally realizes he can be taken advantage of, but he can also stand up for himself.
Yeah. What I like about the climax is the fact that he goes into action with, like, he's got fluid leaking, the backup battery has failed. There are, like, real stakes here, and this is so weird, but it made me think of the end of Iron Man 2, where it's so stupid that they remove pretty much all of the tension from the final act by Tony Stark is dying for the whole movie. He's getting progressively worse and worse. His suit of armor gets all effed up. And then, but in time for the climax, here's the magic element that'll cure you. Here's your brand new suit. Now go race off and get the bad guy fully powered. And I always thought how much better it would have been if that climax had been him at death's door, that in order to cure himself, he had to defeat Whiplash, and that he was using a busted up suit of armor, and you really felt like there's no way he's going to be able to take this dude. And again, very strange comparison, but it gives the climax of this movie real stakes. Like, he's pushing himself too hard. They're concerned that if you pursue these guys, you're going to die.
And he thinks it's worth it. He says, I don't care. They have to be brought. Oscar, who the whole movie has been pretending to be his friend. Mm-hmm. Oscar is my friend. He says it. And that this man has tricked him is so unjust and so lights such a fire under his rockets
Ben Javari, is that you?
That's what he has down there. but he, I think it, yeah, you're right. It gives it such stakes because he knows that he's in trouble and he still thinks, no, if it's the last thing I do, I am going to get him and bring him to some kind of justice.
And the movie isn't making any false promises either. He does die because of this.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not until, Ben, you know, gives him CPR and shocks him back or whatever. It's like, but it's – and Ben's reaction is pretty heartbreaking too when he's saying, like, begging his friend not to go. And
yeah.
But, yeah, so the thugs get their comeuppance. Oscar is captured. Bonus points for using We Need a Hero over this sequence.
Oh, I was so excited to hear that.
I was like
– just one of the best jams.
Yeah.
One of the best.
And then, yeah, happy ending. They start a toy corporation using Johnny Five's image. He becomes something of like a celebrity. And then the last scene is so, so cute with him and Ben both becoming American citizens.
That's great. That's
so cool.
And yeah, he's gold plated, which is fucking sweet. I wanted a toy of that and they never made it.
You also get the Fred's kind of closing line. He's like, all my life I've been a salesman. I finally have a product to sell. Mm. Which is great, because I mean, he mm-hmm. you know, he's kind of a lowlife, but you know, he learns probably the most of any character in this movie. Mm. He learns to love.
Mm. I think we all need to learn that lesson.
And that was the day Johnny Five taught the world how to love.
It's true. I'm not going to say that I cried during that last scene, but I'm not going to say that I didn't.
Oh, okay. Hey guys, he totally cried. hey America, Chris cried. That happened.
So, okay, let's talk final thoughts and wrap up and all that. For me, this movie is like so much more thematically ambitious than I remembered. The diamond stuff is sort of perfunctory and the love story doesn't have a lot of momentum, but I was so pleasantly surprised by the Johnny Five stuff that I have to very enthusiastically endorse this one. I don't expect everyone to like it as much as I did, but I thought this was a lot of fun, and I really like the fact that it's a kids' movie that knows kids aren't idiots. It's got enough goofy humor to keep them entertained, but it also gives them something to chew on and think about.
I absolutely agree. I thought it was when we said not only Short Circuit but Short Circuit 2, I was sort of like, what is gonna come of this nonsense? And
that's how Donna's inner monologue sounds.
That's how she ends like acts in her life. Like she's the good one for like ending Act 1. Like, what is gonna come of this nonsense? Better wait till Act 2.
But I was delighted. I was absolutely delighted. Johnny Five is just one of the coolest non-human characters I can remember. And what a wonderful effort. This is actually a great movie.
Carlos?
I thought that this movie was going to be one that I had to forgive for being made in the 80s. Mm-hmm. So you have to, you know, I thought I was going to have to forgive the cheesiness and forgive some of the jokes or whatever. But what I found was that this movie is super duper tight. Mm-hmm. The script is tight. The themes played throughout of just kind of our culture separating us and also bringing us together. And, you know, the thing with the taxi driver who knew all the pop songs and that's how, you know, he was kind of more, you know, just as American as everyone else, even though he was from Russia.
Yeah.
And, you know, I thought that this movie was really sweet and really optimistic about, people in major cities, you know, having to kind of live together, even though they're from very different backgrounds. And, I just was not expecting this movie to be like so good. Like I didn't want to like have to go out and actually like buy the movie because I don't have Netflix. I think I might just go out and buy it anyway because it's such a good movie. Yeah, I want to own this movie.
Yeah.
Donna, I think you have a game for us.
Da 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 da. It's time. Now it's time.
Wait, for... you had to clarify. Wait, now it's time.
Now is the time.
Now say it like Bane.
Yeah, I was just going to say, do it like Bane.
Now is the time for who would you be and who would you if?
Okay, so who's going first, or who should we guess for?
Let's guess for Donna, since we all know who we want to have.
I'm going to say Donna wants to be Johnny Five and wants to F. This is tough. Between Ben and Fred, I'd say.
Because of the political implications of Fisher Stevens.
Yeah, I'm going to say Ben.
I would say you want to be... God, yeah, there are six characters in this movie.
Of the four characters in the film.
you want to... If we can say Johnny Five, and I guess we can because in the movie he is alive.
That's the whole point, yeah.
He counts, yeah. So I would say, yeah, you want to be Johnny Five, and yeah, I'm going Ben. I have to... Well, no, you know, for the sake of it, I'll say Fred.
Mm. Okay, well, thank you for your input.
500 megabytes of it.
Megabytes of input.
You're absolutely right. I definitely want to be Johnny Five. He's so cool. Yes, I'm Johnny Five all the way. However, I'm going to throw you a little curveball on who would I F. I don't know if you recall a certain bald, smart, and criminal character. The nerdy goon. Goon. Whose name is Saunders. Whoa. And
Colonel Saunders.
And I thought if I was Johnny Five and I was with him, he would understand. Boy. He would appreciate my artificial intelligence.
Oh, you're so
lead him
right.
Away from a life of crime.
His intelligence isn't artificial.
I hate the mental image, but I love the thought process here.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Who knows what else he's got in that utility box?
Ooh, ring-a-ding-ding.
Dildos is the answer.
That's like the fourth episode you brought up some type of...
I said I wasn't going to mention vibrators. I just got you on a technicality. All right, Carlos, I'm going to say for you that you want to be Fred. I mean, Johnny
I'm
going to
laugh at whoever you say. I'm just thinking about how there are so few characters in this movie.
I was going to say Johnny Five, but I also think that Fred seems kind of like a cool guy, too. And I thought maybe it would be cooler to have Johnny Five as a friend rather than be Johnny Five. But, so I know I'm wrong. I'm wrong every week, but I'm going to say Fred and, obviously, Sandy.
Nice. Okay. Definitely, you know, Sandy. Sure. And then I think that you want to be the guy at the beginning that is carrying the diamonds.
What? That is a deep cut, Donna.
Seriously. It's the man at the newspaper stand who says, Johnny Five is my friend.
It's extra number four in the art gallery scene.
I'm just trying to make it a little bit interesting.
Okay, I appreciate that.
He's got a bunch
that.
Of diamonds. Okay, okay. He's got a bunch of diamonds. Well, and he's very serious. Okay. He handcuffs them to himself. His whole life is diamonds.
That guy is always... He's going to die. That guy in a movie is going to die. The dude that's handcuffed to a briefcase.
Well, I guess the moral of the story is I'm just a bad person and a terrible friend.
But you like cats.
I do like
cats.
You do
love a good cat.
You know, I think that's a redeeming quality.
Yeah. So, Carlos.
So it's Sandy, who I would F, who I would bed. And
that is creepy.
Who would you be? Who would you be and who would you bed?
We're changing it.
Okay.
I would be Ben. And honestly, Ben. I pass for Indian way more than Fisher Stevens does.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I would just be Ben. I think he's also, like, he's human, so he's got that going for him. And he's also, like, pretty much just as sweet as Johnny Five is. And he's got junk, so he can actually, you know, he can bed Sandy.
Oh, okay. So. I thought I was like, oh, he's going to clarify. No, he means an actual penis.
No,
okay.
I mean that junk.
Okay.
Oh, junk.
One day my child will hear this. And she is much older.
I'm just going to assume if I have kids, they're not going to give a shit about anything I did or do or will do.
That's because, like, the moment they're born, you're going to tell them Johnny Five isn't real.
Look, I'm just going to, trust me, you're going to thank me later. I'm sparing you. It's all bullshit. Everyone's a liar. Get ready.
Oh. All right, well, good answers. Yeah, let's go for Chris. Chris.
I can't say anything. This is pretty much on you at this point. I think you mean Carlos.
Oh, man. I would say that, I think your answers are the same. I think you want to be Ben and you want to bed Sandy.
I mean, okay, so that's probably true. But again, I'm going to say,
okay,
Sandy, sure. And then I think that you want to be the girl at the bookstore with the,
what
with the great mug.
What the fucking fuck? If I were to evaluate our friendship based on the answers you give in this segment, Donna's not my friend.
No! I'm sorry. I'm just having too much fun.
No, okay, so my initial answer was I wanted to be Johnny Five and F Sandy. Because in my mind, who you want to be doesn't necessarily, like, you don't have to be that
right.
person
Certainly.
To F.
Certainly.
Whatever.
Sure.
But yeah, Ben is, it's really, really close. I just think, like, again, I'm only going to choose Johnny Five because I think what he's going through is a little bit heavier than, oh, this girl doesn't like me. And now, as much as I relate to both of those sentiments, or have been able to relate, you know, not anymore, my wife doesn't like me. How do I get her to notice me? As relatable as these dilemmas have been at various points in my life, who hasn't felt like Johnny Five, and who hasn't felt alone in a crowd or just like, what is everyone staring at? Why can't, what am I doing wrong? What is this joke that everyone else is in on that I'm not? And yeah, I just really feel for the guy. I really love Johnny Five. So I want to be Johnny Five and I want to put it in Sandy.
That sounds like an adverb an adverb for how you want to put it in.
Who would you be and who would you put it in? doesn't have the same ring to it.
It just sounds like,
it doesn't
who
really
would you
work
be.
For me either.
Who would you be and who would you stuff your shit into?
Ew.
Just zoom in.
Ick.
Who would you be and whose vaginal opening would you stick your penis into?
Oh,
I think it's bedtime. Oh, I think it's time to be sleepy Chris, and I think it's time to go to bed. Oh, no. Oh, God. All right. That's it for us. Please let us know if you have any suggestions for other movies we should revisit. Subscribe on iTunes. Like our Facebook page to find out what we're looking at in the next episode. And we'll see you next time.